From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fifth day of August 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear from Emerson Nafziger, University of Illinois Extension agronomist, about this year's soybean crop at mid-season. And then we'll begin our Commodity Week program in the second half hour, so stay around for that. We'll have Dan Zwicker and Joe Vaklevic, along with Sherman Newland, on hand to discuss the week in commodity markets right here on Illinois Public Media for a Friday afternoon. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. September corn at 324 and a quarter, up 3.5. December at 334 and a quarter, 3.25 higher. March up 3 at 344 and a half. July corn up 3 cents. And next year's December up 2.25. August beans 13 and a quarter higher at $10.03. November at 974 and a half, up 17 and 3/4. January up 17 and a half. And the May contract up 15. July up 14 and a quarter. Next year's November beans at 925. 5.75, up 9.5 cents. Wheat futures in the soft red. July contracted 479.75, up 2.25. Nearby September 12.75 higher at 416. The hard red harvest month July up a nickel for next year at $4.74. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby August at $117.50, $1.17.5 higher. August feeders up $2.27.5 at $149.85, and lean hogs at $67.82, 12.5 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this fifth day of August. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Zuzulo is here now to talk about the marketplace and what happened for the day and this week. Good afternoon to you, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
It's been kind of a nice little couple of days, a rally, especially in the bean pit. Corn finally followed through. This all coming just a few days, well, a week before we get to USDA's crop production report. What do you make of it?
Well, it was a lot better end, as you say, than it was when we began the week. I think there's a couple different things, Todd. First and foremost were the private estimates ahead of this USDA crop report a week from today, as you noted. They came out big to start the week out, and they tended to shrink and go backwards in terms of yield projections. And give you an example, FC Stone came out first of the week at 175 yield on corn, 48.8 yield on beans, both substantially above the July numbers from USDA. But by today, we had Informa come out with a 169.8 yield on corn and down to about a 47.7 yield on beans, still above last year, but, you know, 1.1 bushels less than Stone in the beans, and almost 6 bushels plus less than Stone in the corn. So that helped a lot. But I think the other thing happened were the technicals. The bean bear tried to put the weather market in the can, tested the 200-day moving average in November at 955, could not hold that level. Weather models flipped on them. Eastern Corn Belt, Bean Belt guys are getting very nervous right now about their bean and even their corn yields at this point. Same thing in the wheat. Wheat technical bear tried to come in with the soft red close below $4. Could not do that. That would have been the first close below that level since 06. Couldn't do that. And then we got news of a weaker European crop. You and I talked about the French crop. French government came out today and said it's going to be a 30-year low in terms of production. So I think those fundamentals from the yield and supply side, along with the technicals and the bear being able to push but not hold the line, probably helped give us today's close, so that by the end of the week, we're still down 30 cents roughly in August beans. But September wheat was able to close above a trend line that had been in place since June, close up almost 9 cents on the week. And the third feature out there in the outside markets is crude. Crude oil tried to make new weekly lows, but by Thursday's close, it had taken back all of its losses from the previous week. Looks like it's going to close up about 25 cents a barrel. That's very, very nice going into the report next Friday.
And it's doing that despite rig counts continuing to move up in the United States.
That's exactly right. We had a lot bigger drop in gasoline inventories than expected. And I think you had in the beans and in the gasoline help helping the soy and helping the energy together, the demand market. You know, we can't leave out the issue of the stellar demand that we've seen in soybean exports. I think we did about 2.1 million tons of fresh sales reported by USDA in the last 5 or 6 marketing days. So it's a very clear indication when you see those kind of numbers that we have found demand at these lower prices. We are still cheaper than South America, both in beans and especially in corn. I think our Gulf price is running $30 to $40 a ton lower than Brazil's Gulf price in the corn right now. So we have the pole position when it comes to the export demand. We just have to keep watching the dollar.
Or if you're of a mind, as long as USDA's numbers aren't too erratic next week, that we'll find a bottom earlier rather than later in the market for corn and soybeans?
I would say we're tracking that way in the soybeans. And when you look at a seasonal chart, there's a big distinction between corn and beans. We're tracking very similar to 2007 with the soybeans right now. And that went sideways to higher after the August report and made a pretty nice move up between the August report and the September report. Corn, though, continues to trade almost in the exact same form or fashion or trend as 2014. And unless USDA gives us a surprise yield, meaning it stays below 170, 171, something like that, I think that would be a surprisingly bullish or price-friendly yield number. Unless we get something like that, I still think that we're probably going to try and keep the corn under pressure until we get into the September stocks report at the end of the month. A lot of that goes back to the wheat market. Can the wheat make a low similar to what the cattle have been able to do? And, you know, we talked about this on Commodity Week a few weeks ago, that long-term technicals in wheat and cattle and feeders all look the same. Wheat and feeders, or excuse me, feeders and fat cattle have been able to jump while the wheat has been languishing. So next week's going to be a real big week for the corn market to see some leadership to the upside in the wheat market if we're going to change this trend and join the beans and potentially go up higher after the August report.
So given all of this, we're really in between wheat crops at this point. Much that can help out here?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, I think this is where maybe not the next 15 days if USDA lays on us with an FC Stone type yield of 175, but I'm encouraged by some of the field reports that I'm getting out of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and even here in eastern Kansas, that there are some pollination issues. There are some tip back issues similar to 2014. So I'm encouraged that we might see a lighter corn crop than what the USDA may project next week. And I think the commodity funds are on the doorstep of coming back into the commodities once again, once they feel like the Fed's going to raise rates and once they feel like that the deflationary pressures are over with. Now, we didn't get any help this week from the Bank of England and them going back into quantitative easing, but there's some other indicators out there that would suggest that they're watching the commodity sector really closely for a potential re-entry into it.
Did you hear any reason why Informa's number was below 170 for the yield?
I did not. I did not talk to Chicago today. I was a little bit underwater with some other stuff going on, so I did not talk to Chicago about that today. But they did come in under 14.7 on production. I did note that, and I was very surprised by that because USDA's production in July was 14.54. So if Informa ends up being right, I would call that a very bullish number compared to what the trade's expecting because of those crop conditions. They just haven't moved. They've stayed very, very strong. And, you know, we're at 76 good to excellent, 6 very poor, poor. Last time we had that was back in 2004, where we were 76 good to excellent and 7 very poor and poor. And USDA came out with a 2.7% increase in yield from the July to the August report. So that's probably why the trade is so negative, this yield, when it comes to corn.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much. Always good to talk to you.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzlow is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the deepening angst over trade emerging from the United States presidential campaign is making waves that need to be dealt with, says New Zealand Ambassador Tim Grosser. That's what he told Politico this week. A former trade minister who has shepherded the TPP along since its inception as a minor regional trade initiative, Grosser told Politico that the deal's success will come down to the effectiveness of a strong push from the administration and whether it will be able to pull votes from Republicans in the House. Other TPP nations can do little at this point except support the U.S. administration in its efforts to win approval of the deal and see where the chips fall, Grosser says. He added that since there are major political problems in the United States on trade, New Zealand and others will begin to see what alternatives are available in case Congress fails to ratify the deal as is. And he says, you know where that leads. We're not going to do this with a smile on our face and a song in our hearts. We're going to do it with very, very considerable reluctance, but that's happened before in various theaters. We'll look at our options and exercise whatever options are available, says Grosser. Let's move from global to national news. An Illinois congressman and House Agriculture Committee member says talks between the Clinton campaign and the California Air Resources Board raised new doubts about a Clinton administration's commitment to the renewable fuel standard. Republican Rodney Davis has lots of corn farmers in his East Central Illinois district and complains this is not a good time to be talking to California regulators about changing the RFS.
You know, we went from a very insecure position of fuels and fuel security in this country to one that's much more secure on our homeland, and that's because of the RFS. I support the RFS. I think we should abide by what is law.
Well, California's low-carbon fuel standard leaves it up to companies how to reach a carbon reduction target. And Davis says any movement away from the RFS will only hurt one of the bright spots in the U.S. economy. The campaign says Clinton just wants to get the RFS back on track and promote more use of advanced biofuels. And finally today, a pair of livestock-related stories. In response to feedback from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and independent studies by Informa Economics, CME Group Friday announced what it calls enhancements to the live cattle futures market. For starters, CME Group will add a seasonal discount of $1.50 per hundredweight on live cattle tendered to its Worthing, South Dakota delivery location for the October contract only. Research concluded the discount would better align delivery values with cash market prices. And from beef, we'll move to pork, the other white meat. A processing company in Iowa last week launched a new line of pork products under the brand name Haluka that addresses consumer concerns around animal welfare and clean label foods. Beeler's Inc., non-GMO, marketed pork is derived from sows housed in deep-bedded pens, as opposed to gestation stalls, and the animals are fed vegetarian, non-GMO diets. Beeler's is a sixth-generation family operation with nationwide distribution. The Haluka brand pork will be available through select retailers and restaurants. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Earlier today, I dropped by Emerson Nafziger's Turner Hall office here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I asked the agronomist about the growing season so far. You can find all of the interviews, including one on tipback, one on frost, and the one you're about to hear online. This one's on soybeans. They're at willag.org. I asked him about the season so far for the nation's number one oilseed crop.
The soybeans really do have a special look to them. They have had all season, uniform, green, very few drowned out spots, something we don't often experience in Illinois. There's usually some spots that get drowned out at some point, and this year there are very few. And it just looks like a thick green blanket has been spread over the field. In fact, I've been a little bit concerned with the warm weather and the good moisture that we've had that maybe we're putting a little bit too much growth on the crop. This is something that doesn't really grab people too much, but we've seen cases in the past. 2003 was actually a good example of that, although it was dry late in the season that year, but the plant growth was tremendous. Big leaves, tall plants. Everybody looks at that and says, wow, that's really a special crop growing out there. Soybeans, though, don't act like corn. You know, the taller, the greener, the better. They have to set pods, and they have to set pods over a period of time. And if plants are too tall, we think there's a lot of shading that goes on down in the plant where these pods need to set, and that shading, if there's too much canopy, too much growth, that can actually detract some from the pod set. Pod set is really critical, just like kernel set is critical in corn. Pod set is really critical in soybeans. And just to put it simply, without a lot of pods and seeds per acre, obviously, you're not going to get very much yield. And so there's a disconnection here between the way the crop looks at this point and the number of pods it's going to have on it. I looked at some of ours this week, and right now pod set is just going on. So you'll see flowers at a node and some little pods that have formed and maybe some little bigger pods. This all happens over a period of several weeks here. But what we saw last year, a crop that didn't look very good going into July, ended up one of our best crops ever. And just astonishing, you know. It didn't matter much what it looked like in early July. So we contrast that with this year when everything looked good in early July, and we're probably going out on the limb a little bit to say, well, if it looks this good, it has to be a really good crop. We could go back and look at other years where it's looked this way and find just average yields. But the difference this year is that, you know, the crop looks pretty good almost everywhere. Even the double crop has come up and made good growth. And so we have reason to be optimistic about it. What I'm seeing now looking at the crop, although this is like corn that's just starting to pollinate, you don't really have much idea how it will end up, is an encouraging number of pods if it can continue to do what it's doing now. The warm temperatures aren't really a burden on soybeans. We think that's probably fairly favorable. We would have been good maybe to have a little bit drier conditions, say back in June and July, to shorten the crop growth a little bit. We think that to the tip of the stem, not the top of the canopy, which is what you see driving by, but the tops of the stems, if we get over about 36 inches, we're getting into that territory where this shading might actually limit the number of pods that set up and down the stem. And we're certainly going to be there and above that in many cases. The stem growth has not been completed yet. That's probably not going to happen for another week or 10 days when flowering comes to an end. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll have a lot better idea of how many pods are actually there and how many are going to fill. But it takes a fair amount of stress at this point in time to get a lot of pods sort of dropping off. They can form and then drop off the soybean plant. And we would normally be concerned about that if it was, you know, if it'd been dry for a long time and we were just, and the plants were coming under visible stress. The number of pods that we have here in about the middle of August, that's going to be the real determining factor. And we're often surprised. We were surprised last year. When you have to see 4 and 5 pods per node to have a really special crop developing. And it's just a little bit early to be able to say that at this point. I'm optimistic just because the crop is still showing good growth. There really aren't any problems out there in these fields. I was suggesting that this might not be a good time to do things like put nitrogen on the crop because we don't want to do anything under these kind of conditions to actually encourage more vegetative growth. Now this pods are going to be the whole story from here on out. Normally the pods that we set, the crop can fill them, and so we're not too worried about that. If it's a real heavy pod numbers, we'll often see a little bit of lodging going out there in fields. I actually think that's a good thing if we see a little bit of lodging. It means that there's enough weight on those plants to pull them down a little bit. They don't go flat anymore like they did at one time, but leaning a little bit is not a bad thing at all. And I hope that we're in for big surprises when the leaves fall off of this crop as well.
That's Emerson Nafziger, University of Illinois Extension agronomist. You can find my interview with him online at willag.org. In fact, there are 3 parts to it, the one you just heard on soybeans, 1 on corn, and 1 on growing degree days and frost this fall.